Oh, I need my gavel. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the November 8th, 2012 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Actually, this meeting is a continuation of the October 25th meeting for which there was no quorum. Madam Clerk.
First, I want to apologize coming to you here today right now. 3 months late, it's really not what my family or how I was brought up. But I'm here to thank you. I want to thank you publicly, and I want to thank staff publicly for all your efforts on Cold Canyon Landfill. You've done an incredible job. You put a lot of personal time into it, coming out, meeting with the neighbors, reading the reams of information. Staff put up with a lot of guff from not only the neighbors, but also the landfill. County Council, although I didn't get to talk to her very much, did a fantastic job. just want to say, you know, that while I may disagree with your actions, my family and I, we respect your decision, and we respect the efforts that you put into it. You're like a judge. You can't win on any decision. Whatever you came up with, every decision you make, you're going to disagree, or you're going to upset one party, and maybe both parties. But I think afterwards you have to kind of get together and say, hey, okay, you've made your decision and respect you as individuals for that decision. As you know, the permit has been appealed, and personally I stand that I think that I respect your decision. I think that it should be upheld because of the time you put into it and the grounds that people make for appeals sometimes I think are very specious and not appropriate. So I just want to spend just a minute of your time to thank you individually, you know, for it. It means a lot to me and everything that the staff did. And I'm also very glad that Commissioner Murphy, you finally got your picture on the webpage.
So I haven't seen that. I have to tune that in.
Wasn't on there for 2 years, so just thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Falkenhagen. I appreciate you taking the time to come back to this forum and give us that positive feedback. It's always nice for the commission to hear words of appreciation of the efforts that we do make, because all of us here do take this job very seriously.
One last thing, because sure. Since I still think I had about 1 minute to go on that.
I wasn't looking at my watch.
Take advantage of every minute. I just want to say also that because of the efforts that you all did on this thing here, if there's anything that my family or I can do to help you in a similar situation or something, anything like that, please call. Be more than happy to help.
Okay, thank you again. And since I have no other speaker slips, I'm going to close public comment.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that I'll never again say that the commission, being on the commission, is a thankless task.
Well, Mr. Falkenhagen, you've accomplished quite a bit this morning. Okay. Before we go any further and ask for planning staff updates. As I mentioned earlier, this meeting is a continuation of the October 25th meeting. We did not have a quorum for that meeting, and the reason we did not have a quorum is because there was really only one item on the agenda in addition to update from a tax situation. And I had requested that staff try to arrange for continuation of the meeting, and they did so, and I wanted to thank staff for their efforts. I also want to thank the applicant for agreeing to that continuation, and that's a Christian School that is here this morning. And I also want to thank Commissioner Christensen, because she is the only one who showed up at the 25th so that we could stay legal and continue the meeting. So thank you very much, Commissioner Christensen. Appreciate that. One other item of commission business I think might be of interest to some on the commission as well as to the public is a recent visit by two of our commissioners to the large solar projects in the Carrizo Plain. So perhaps Commissioner Irving and Commissioner Christensen would like to say a few words about their observations on the visit.
Okay.
Thank you. And I'll say a couple things. It's still early, and the projects are moving along much faster than we thought. They're employing a great many more people than had anticipated. They're close to 1,600 employees now out there. You may recall some of our discussions over where the employees would come from, and as Commissioner Christensen and I observed, it seems to be split between the two projects, but in talking to the owners of, or some of this, the employees of First Solar, they said that about 80% of their workers they can certify are from San Luis Obispo. Impacts are, in some cases, less than we had anticipated, and I think in other cases are exactly what we anticipated. So it was, all in all, it was a very, very good field trip. Lots of people attended, and what I'm not capable of repeating was, you remember how we discussed at length about contributions to the schools and whether we had a visitor center here or there, and I think Commissioner Christensen could fill in on what the outcome of that was.
Well, as you recall, we couldn't decide that, about whether or not where to locate a visitor center and the impacts of people driving out to the visitor center. And yeah, we left it very open in terms of the what exactly would come out of that, but we wanted to make sure that the solar farms were used as a source of education and information. And the upshot was, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the upshot is that there is an education fund established that will actually go to the schools and provide the education at schools about solar energy and about what's being done at these two solar projects, rather than having something that's out on the Carrizo Plain contributing to additional impacts. The education efforts are going to go into the schools throughout the county. And that's what the money will be used
for. How did that get figured out? Was that the board?
That's the board, county staff level. That wasn't us.
This is Ellen Carroll. That was, I think the commission sort of started the discussion on that, and then it continued with both projects as they went to the board. And the condition had a fair number of options because we just weren't sure. But at this point, what's happening is that there's been a renewable energy education center funding and facility that's going to be that we're in the final stages of having at Cuesta College. And so then that will be kind of the hub, and that those and the idea is that it will be there will be materials and training for teachers and students too that can then be brought relating to renewable energy that then can be brought to the schools. So we're not quite finished with the final scope of work on that. We're still working on it, but I think what's going to end up is this renewable energy education center. I need to practice saying that a little bit better at Cuesta.
Well, it sounds like an excellent endpoint and idea. Thinking back to all of the meetings that we had on both of those projects, one of my main concerns from an aesthetic standpoint were the overhead lines and the 60-foot and 120-foot utility poles. And I don't know whether any of those are up yet or if some of them are. Was your perception? Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that did, in fact, the Gentai line, I think it was called, in the SunPower, where they had built a long connection. Those are quite visible. They are, as you recall, you did a great deal of research on whether they could underground those, and we were ultimately dissuaded from that. But no, those are definitely visible. They're going to be a big impact. But on the other hand, the smaller lines, we know we put some underground in here and there.
Them off about 2,500 feet from the road. Maybe,
there were things of that sort. Some of the arrays are not even visible from Highway 58. And one of the observations I made was I didn't realize how dramatic the topography was And so some of the arrays are set down at really much lower than was ever presented in front of the commission. So that was quite an interesting trip. And as you know, SunPower is delivering a small amount, I think 22 megawatts right now. And First Solar is roaring away, really. They're waiting for PG&E has to finish their connection. And then First Solar will be delivering power, I think, by the end of the year, they thought. Yeah. So they're going full tilt. And SunPower, both of them, well, First Solar thinks that they'll be accelerated and complete about a year faster than they had anticipated. Wow. They're really going for it here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd note that both of these have been written up nationally. I've seen several national stories pointing to it somewhat as a model for what solar projects should be nationwide. And so we've got quite a bit of publicity, if you want to call it that, for these two projects.
Are these not in combination the largest installation at a
currently yeah, there are others in the works? Certainly.
Now, if you want to see the opposite of this,
so you'll need to make sure and take a peek at those and then bring those with you on the 13th.
Okay.
And that's really all I have.
Okay.
Well, are there other items on that?
There's several other items. Viva Farms, there's an Irish Hills Plaza project, and I think that's it.
Ellen, looking out longer term into 2013, are there a number of big EIR projects that are stacked up that we don't know about that are going to come forward?
No, and we'll make sure, like, we're giving you the EIR a month in advance, and so we can shoot for giving you the EIRs as much in advance as possible.
Okay. Thank you.
The reason Commissioner Irving is concerned about that is he will likely be chair next year, so I don't blame him for looking ahead there. Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Carroll, for the update.
You're welcome.
We move now to the consent agenda. And as I mentioned earlier, Commissioner Irving was absent for two of the meetings. Those are items C and D, so we will need to pull those and vote on those separately. And then item E, and I need to ask Ms. McDonald for a procedural question. That was the October 25th meeting for which there was no quorum. And so is that a receive and file item and we don't vote on it? Or I'm not sure how to handle that since that hadn't happened on my watch before.
You know, that's a good question. And I think that the receive and file is probably the proper procedure given that I don't know how else you would vote on it.
Okay. So the motion would be to receive and file then item E, then I guess that way. And then you just vote on a receive and file. Is that how that would work?
Sure, correct.
Okay.
So then you would vote on A through D.
Yeah, but we need to do those separately because of Commissioner Irving. So, okay. Then I would entertain a motion to approve, let's see, that would be items A and B.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Now I would entertain a motion on C and D, which are the items Commissioner Irving was absent.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Abstain.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0 with one abstention. And now I would entertain a motion on item E to receive and file item E.
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
Call the roll, please.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
Could I ask a question about the minutes? I noticed on the votes we have ayes, noes, and absence. Should it be abstention as opposed to absent?
When
we have absent in the roll call at the beginning of the minutes, and I wasn't clear if that should be absent or abstention.
The way the Granicus software works, when a commissioner abstains from a vote, it's not listed at all, not on absent, abstention, or present. Just your name is not there at all. But on the roll call, no, not on the roll call. It just won't show your name at all. And then I indicate just before the vote your abstention. So, 'cause a lot of people ask that, and that's just the way the program works.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Ramona, would you please introduce hearing item number one?
Continued hearing to consider a request by Coastal Christian School to modify conditional use permit DRC 2008-00021, Supervisorial District Number 3, Michael Conger, Project Manager.
Thank you. Before Mr. Conger starts with his staff report, do commissioners have any ex parte to report? Hearing none, good morning, Mr. Conger.
Good morning, Chair O'Grady, members of the commission. Michael Conger, County Planning Staff. This is a request by Coastal Christian School to modify a previously approved conditional use permit. That permit is DRC 2008-00021, which was last considered by the commission in January of 2011. This is a vicinity map. The project site's shown in red. It's located adjacent to both the cities of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach on the west side of Oak Park Boulevard, about halfway between James Way and Noyes Road. And it's located in the rural lands land use category. It's outside of the urban reserve lines for both cities. But I should point out that the project site is in the sphere of influence for the city of Pismo Beach. This is an aerial image showing the granted a conditional use permit by the Planning Commission in 1979. It was also considered as part of the Los Robles del Mar specific plan, which was processed through the city of Pismo Beach, and that was originally done in 1998. Then the Local Agency Formation Commission had considered annexation of this site as well as the Los Robles del Mar site into the city of Pismo Beach on two different occasions in 2008 and 2012. Both of those ultimately were denied. The Board of Supervisors saw a text amendment to the land use ordinance to allow the school to use a well in 2010, and your commission, of course, approved the conditional use permit in 2011. As far as environmental review, there have been three different environmental impact reports that have been done on the Los Robles del Mar specific plan project, which includes the Coastal Christian School. And in addition, the county did a mitigated negative declaration when the land use ordinance text amendment was going through as well. And that covered the conditional use permit under that mitigated negative declaration. So this is a site plan of the school just to show you what was authorized under the previous approval. We've got classrooms and administration, multi-purpose building, gymnasium, sports fields, gardens, chapel, and then this will show you where the temporary campus is being proposed in the vicinity of the football field right here. So the requested modification would allow a temporary campus. This would be an interim phase. We proposed a limit of 10 years that was based on the applicant's submittal. That temporary campus would have the same student population and faculty population as Phase 1, which is 200 students, 20 faculty. The grading would be substantially reduced down from more than 50,000 cubic yards to 7,000 cubic yards for that phase. It's being located in a relatively level area on the site, one that doesn't require much earthwork. There would be 45 parking spaces, outdoor lunch area, sports fields, kindergarten play area, and then we have a condition of approval that would require removal of that temporary campus within 10 years or upon completion of Phase 1. There was a memo that I put out on November 6th, which hopefully your commission has received, that did give a clarification regarding bonding. There was some extra paragraph in the staff report that spoke about bonding. There was discussion about requiring a bonding condition on this project, and I believe that memo addresses why staff chose not to require a bonding condition in this case. So this is a close-up of the temporary campus. You can see where the various modular structures are going to be located and where the parking lot is. Now the close thing here is the wetland, and we do have a requirement that the school maintain a 25-foot setback from the wetland unless they're going to mitigate for wetland loss, which is a condition of approval for the whole campus. And so this is an aerial image. North, I should point out, is to the bottom of this image. And this is going to kind of show you where on the site the various phases are located. So the temporary campus is going to be in that general area. There's an open space easement on the slope that goes up to the residential uses above. Phase one will ultimately be built in this location. And when phase one is built, the temporary campus will go away. That area will be converted into sports fields. And then there's some later phases that will take place out in this area. So I do have a few council-recommended changes. Finding A on page 1-8, council's recommending that we change environmental coordinator with the word planning commission so that it reads the planning commission finds the mitigated, it's in reference to the mitigated negative declaration. And then condition 48, that appears twice, page 1-27 with red line, page 1-46 as final with no red line, the clean copy. And there it would be replacing the term reconsideration with amendment to the conditional use permit.
Wait a sec. Yes, slow down one moment, please. Condition 48, replace reconsideration. Let me find that. That's the top of page 127.
That's on, yeah, the top of page 127. And then we have both a red line set of conditions in Exhibit B and a clean copy of the conditions in Exhibit C. It's on page 1-46 of Exhibit C.
Yeah, I've been working with
the red line.
Marked up red line, yes. On the, okay, amendment to the conditional use permit.
And then there is the third change, and I can bring that up on the screen here.
Okay.
Oops. And this is to condition 1F. And I'll read this one out because this is kind of long. So condition 1F would now read, this conditional use permit is a phased project. Phase 0 must be vested within 24 months of the effective date of this permit. Phases 1 through 8 must be vested within 12 years of the effective date of this permit. Time extensions beyond. And that concludes my presentation. I'm available for any questions.
Commissioner Christensen has a question.
The only question I had really was about the vesting. So could you just go over condition 1F just a little slower? Can you bring that up? Because I just want to make sure I... That was a real problem, and it looks like you've solved it, but I want to make sure that I at least... get the concept here.
If I could jump in, what are you describing as phase zero?
Phase zero is the interim phase, which would be the temporary campus. Right. And so what this condition clarifies is that the temporary campus, when it is constructed, vests that temporary phase, but it does not vest the full campus. The full campus is not vested until phase one is constructed.
Okay, so that's the part I'm not understanding. Phase 1 through 8 must be vested within 12 years of the effective date of this permit. You're talking about this permit? I mean, I can't figure out when does it start. When does phase 1 through 8 start?
The effective date of the permit, which I would look to council to question if the effective date would be today or the original approval.
The intent, I believe, is today, and I think that's how it should be read, is that this is now the permit that applies. The old one is old.
Superseded.
Exactly. This one supersedes that one. So they would have 12, and I think this is a good discussion I wanted to clarify as well. This is a change to what was originally approved, because the original approval had certain years by which the phases needed to be vested. Right. This actually gives them a lot more flexibility and a lot more time, because they get the phase zero, the interim phase, they get 2 years just like any other ordinary use permit to vest that phase. They don't have to vest phase one until 12 years from the effective date of this permit, so from today's action. And then if they do substantial site work on phase one, that vests the entire permit. And as opposed to before, where it was, you know, phases 1 through 4 were vested when substantial site work was done during that grouping of phases. Then they had another certain number of years to do substantial site work on phase 5 through. Sorry, I have to look at the numbers there, but if you get the idea, it was more structured.
Yeah, each phase had a schedule
for
vesting. I'm going to have more questions about this and compare to the ordinance language later. I don't want to take the time right now to do that, but I just wanted commissioners to understand that, that this is not the last time we'll be speaking about phasing. So.
Okay, yeah, this was just a preliminary question, and
right.
That was, so you're okay. Right.
That was good to get that ball
yeah, that's
rolling.
That's what all I had for right now.
Okay, Commissioner Topping, your light's on. Did you want to?
Questions, yeah.
Question right now?
Yeah, just real quick. Maybe I missed it, but did we hear anything on this particular segment of the project from the city of Pismo Beach?
The city of Pismo Beach has not submitted comments at this time. We initially failed to get a referral out to them. It went to Grover Beach instead of Pismo Beach, and so they were late into the game into hearing about the project, but I spoke with one of the city planners, and she forwarded on the information to the engineers to see if there were any further comments, and there haven't been any comments forthcoming.
Thank you. And then maybe we should talk about this later, but the temporary operation on the in the portables with construction going on the rest of the site, I just want to make sure that we've got proper provisions in there for compatibility.
I think we could talk about that one
okay,
later.
Okay, fine. And then finally, I just wanted to know what's the historical use of this site?
It has, I believe the school acquired it in 1978. I could be wrong about that, but it's been vacant ever since. It was graded in the 1980s, so you can see that there's a lot of the vegetation is not similar to other sites in the surrounding area, and so that's probably one explanation for why it looks physically different.
Sure.
But
it was in anticipation of something else.
It was anticipation of the school. The school was approved in 1979, was the first conditional use permit on this. So,
thank you.
Commissioner Murphy, did you have
a question I had a question. On 48, we changed the word reconsideration to amendment, and I see in our motion approval we're talking about modification, and now you've mentioned issuing a new CUP, so can we clarify what we're doing here today? Is this a modification of the CUP we already issued? Is that the way to look at it? Or are we issuing a new? We're not really issuing a new CUP, are we?
Yes, we are. Supersedes
it does supersede
other
it.
One. Is that correct, Ms. McDonald?
Correct.
Okay.
I believe it.
Change and we use the word amendment instead of modification.
I think it doesn't matter so long as we know that the effective date of the permit and which one controls.
Commissioner Christensen, your light's on?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Mine is.
Oh, yours didn't register.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And Commissioner Christensen.
It's all me.
Well, push your light.
Push mine.
No, push the green one.
Okay.
Let's see what happens. I think last time Commissioner Christensen sat in your chair.
Before that one.
Yeah.
They need to change the.
Yes. Okay. So I'll try to remember. What Commissioner Christensen, when you push your light, what happens? Absolutely nothing. I don't know back in the control room if that can be modified.
Well, you could have figured out a way to do that earlier.
I'll do it right now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Ramona takes care of it.
I'm losing my mind here.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes.
Mr. Conger, could you bring up the aerial of the site that you showed earlier that then morphed into the location of the temporary site, please? I have a question about that. Thank you. There. Where temporary campus is located, if I recall correctly from the site, that is below, in terms of grade, that is below the open space easement area?
Yes.
Yes, this is on the lowest part of the site.
And how visible is that temporary campus site from the housing development that is located on the south side of that road?
The southerly slope is pretty well vegetated with oak and manzanita, so it's not terribly visible. But if vegetation changes occurred,
move over to the left on the screen, if you will. The road there, which road is I forget.
Oh, this is Oak Park.
Oak Park Road.
Oh, you're talking about from
that housing development there. Is the temporary campus site particularly visible to that housing development or not?
I believe it is potentially visible to that housing development, but we do have conditions of approval that require.
Well, I'm anticipating discussion on that, so that's what I wanted to be clear on. Thank you.
Okay, that concludes Commissioner's initial questions anyway, and so I would like to invite the applicant to come forward. Good morning.
Good morning, Planning Commission. My name is John Mack, architect representing Coastal Christian School. And to address that question that you just had, if you have that still available, Michael. The temporary campus is actually elevated about 40 feet above the residence on that side, and due to the positioning of the parking lot and the building's not exceeding 14 feet, 12 to 14 feet, the campus is, you can't see it from the neighborhood. Given a cross-section through there in that parking lot. It won't be visible. It would be visible from the houses up there off of Skyline Drive, you know, just peeks through the oak trees and whatnot. A couple concerns that the Coastal Christian School has, and I don't know if that overhead works, but if that works, I'd like to put up an exhibit. One of the potential issues for us is the incorporation of a new setback requirement that wasn't on the original CUP, the original CUP. In the environmental report, it had indicated that we were required to have a setback of 25 feet to Pismo Clarkia, which has always been our intention to abide by. If we were to now do a 25-foot setback to a wetland, it would cut into our building pad area. Right now I'm showing a 5-foot setback to grading and a 15-foot setback to the buildings, which are, you know, on tripods. They're not cut into the ground. I'd hate to start tearing the whole point of the layout of this temporary campus was to minimize cost. So I had designed the campus to work around the wetlands, so we went have to have like $250,000 worth of wetland mitigation and programs and whatnot that was really hitting their budget hard to complete phase one. So we're trying to work around that without impacting the existing wetlands. We would like to see a 5-foot setback to grading, 15 feet to building is what we're requesting. We want our fields to work and we want our campus to work. We need all the buildings that are proposed. With that, I'm open to comments on that. I like.
I think Commissioner Irving may have a question for you.
To be clear, that red line shows the county's request setback and over your site plan, right?
That's a 25-foot setback line from the wetland.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the report, it was mentioned that you had requested the removal of some of the conditions. Conditions 7 and 8, or parts of thereof. You didn't mention that in your discussion. Are you comfortable with those conditions still being in place, or are you still requesting that they be removed?
It's not a big issue, but it's tedious work, and let me explain. We didn't feel that we needed to do building plans and elevations of all the buildings because these are modulars. There's going to be stock plans that come from the modular manufacturer, and then you choose their colors.
Right.
And
that's all. That you answered my question. Thank you.
Okay, and then I had a question about the bond. I believe the recent memo from staff to the commissioners about the change in the staff report from requiring a bond to not recommending a bond set the amount of the bond at $50,000, which I guess I understood was staff's estimate of what it would take to remediate the site of the temporary campus upon removal. You're saying the cost for that bond is punitive. What can you give us an estimate of? I mean, you've obviously gotten a quote on the bond. What would that be?
What would that be in terms of how it impact us?
You're saying that the cost for the bond would be very impactful, and so you're glad that staff is no longer recommending a bond. And I just like to know what that cost is to you.
Actually, Dr. Bach could probably speak better to that because he's done the cost analysis on the buildings and whatnot.
Okay.
But our budget's like $2 million to get us in. And between the street improvement plans and the street improvements that are taken, you know, roughly $250,000 and just the site development, another $250,000.
Okay.
We only have like $1 million for the trailers. And you start taking $50,000 away, that's two or three classroom buildings that we're not going to be able to...
Well, that's the amount of the bond, not the cost for the bond. So that's what I wanted to get clarified here, and hopefully Mr. McLaughlin can clarify that for us. So I have a speaker slip from him.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McLaughlin, would you like to speak on behalf of...
Hello, commissioners. Again, I'd like to thank you for your consideration. My name is Bob McLaughlin. I'm the principal of Coastal Christian School, and this is my third year at the school. Managed to come here 3 years ago and sort of tried to get up to speed, trying to find out what was going on with the construction program, the designs, and everyone was ecstatic that they had accomplished what we'd never really done before, the conditional use permit and moving forward on a building program. We did a feasibility study about how much money we could raise. And very honestly, it burst our little balloon at that particular point. We determined that the project at build-out is somewhere in the range of $40 million or so, and that the initial phase one was between $5 and $7 million, depending upon a lot of criteria. So we wanted to find out, could we come anywhere as close to that phase one program. It turns out that we have a very, very good chance of raising about $1 million and going into debt for about $1 million on a short-term loan that would allow us to get a campus up there. So we set a budget of $2 million. We're a small school. We've been around for 40 years. We've had the property and dreamed of a school for about 33 years. And so actually moving your meeting from the 25th to November 8th in the great scheme of things was not a big deal. For your convenience, that was wonderful. But the goal is to get the entire school up on the property. If only part of our students moved up, we'd still be renting, which would not allow us the funds from our general fund to pay off the loan. So we need to move all the students up, and we looked around, could we do that in phase one? Could we take phase one and construct in such a way that it would be less expensive? Right budget, we're in the process of sort of in the beginning stages of fundraising. It seems to be going successfully. Our project, our capital campaign will probably reach a climax about a year from now. That will give us time to actually start construction. Our plan is to start construction in late 2013, then the 2013-2014 school year, and we'll be up on the campus by 2014. The question is, our whole project is financially set up so that any loans that we need will be paid off in time to start phase one in a timely fashion. So the idea of being vested on the campus within 12 years, I believe, is a doable thing. And what's nice about it is it does put pressure on us to keep that in mind. Honestly, there is significant pressure to get things up on the campus, get the students housed. And I'm not sure we need more pressure, but it'll work. Without this temporary campus, we just won't get there. There isn't a way that we can dream up at the moment of getting up onto the campus at phase one. So phase zero really became the only way to step us up on the campus. Portables are not particularly attractive. I've been up on Skyline. You look down and you see the trees, and there are a lot of trees along the fence line for most of those homes. As a matter of fact, we even trim them for some of our neighbors. At most, they may see a rooftop. They'll probably see our field. You can't see it from the housing across the street on Oak Park. The wetlands, we've tried very carefully to stay away from them because the mitigations are expensive and add to our project. And so the project was designed around them to simply shift a wetlands by digging into the hillside a little bit further may cause more damage than we want to. So we're asking for that mitigation to be reduced a little bit from the 25-foot level. But in answer to your question, Commissioner Grady, I have no idea because I did not look up the cost of the bond. I don't think the bond is necessary. The language is very clear. And believe me, I have two board members who have been working on this for years. They want that permanent buildings up there more than you do. And they will work very, very hard. If our fundraising goes well, what will happen is that will reduce the loan levels. With a smaller loan, we'll be able to pay it off sooner. We'll have to do a building campaign. Usually, a capital campaign. You don't want to put one on top of the other. Probably 5 years out would be nice. If we did one 5 years out for the next phase of the campus, or even 10 years out for the next phase, I think it would be very successful because we would have shown to the community and to our own clients that we have the ability to get on the property.
I think Commissioner Irving has a question for you, Dr. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Thank you, Doctor. Your letter dated August 7th refers to a feasibility study.
Yes.
So I have some questions about that. Number one, who did the feasibility study? Was it done this year? I mean, it reflects current conditions, I presume. And did, in the further paragraph, I think your last paragraph, you discuss the fact that being once on the property, grants become a possibility, et cetera, and donors will be assured of the school's ability, et cetera. The people conducting the feasibility study, did they delve into those questions as well? So that what you're referencing here in the letter is based on the results of that study. Is that correct?
That is correct. The company is Gaynor & Associates. They're a San Jose firm.
Okay.
Well-known in the school and Christian community. They conducted it in 2011. We spent, I think, about three or four months interviewing alumni of the school, potential donors, leaders in the community, leaders in the school.
Initially, the staff concluded that a bond was required, and they concluded that presumably because of the way the ordinance is worded, and I concluded the same thing when I read the ordinances. Now, we may now have a disagreement about that, but nevertheless, I'm trying to find a way, and it's a matter of security for the county, and so I'm trying to find a way to that maybe a bond would not be required if there was sufficient collateral. Do you own the land? Is that correct?
We own the land.
Okay.
Free and complete
clear. Well, that eases my mind somewhat, and perhaps Ms. McDonald could comment. You understand my concern that there's, you know, there's what, 16 structures going out here, and there's going to be some remediation done, and I'm concerned that, especially where an applicant maybe is having funding problems for the project they want to do, it seems to me we need to pay attention to the back end of this project. And so is collateral, sufficient collateral, an adequate substitute or in the spirit and intent of the ordinances as far as requiring a performance bond like this, security?
So I think that becomes an issue of enforceability there. And I have to admit that I'm not aware of an ordinance requirement requiring a bond for removal of structures like this.
Okay, well, I've got a copy of it, and we can get into that later. But, I had one other. Oh, can the county, as part of the enforcement process, can the county lien property?
It can, after it goes through the proper noticing and procedures.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions to Dr. McLaughlin?
Oh, no.
That's all right. That, on that topic.
Speaking of that lien question, then, does that become a primary lien, or would it, as a governmental body, does that supersede a financial institution's lien?
It depends on how we go about creating the lien and it really is a code enforcement mechanism. So there are certain procedures that would allow the county to create an assessment, and then it would become a priority. It's not technically a lien. It's an assessment. Or you can go a route of creating a lien, which is the same as a judgment lien, which goes to the bottom of the stack in terms of priority. So it depends on how we went about our code enforcement. And that's really what it becomes. Without a bond, it becomes a matter of code enforcement and interpreting our conditions of approval to require removal at a certain date and going through the proper procedures to enforce our code in that way.
Yeah, that's the purpose of the bond, is to make sure that the conditions are adhered to, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Any more questions for Dr. McLaughlin? Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for your consideration.
Appreciate that. And I'm going to open public comment. Anyone here from the public who would like to speak on this particular item? I don't have any speaker slips. Okay, seeing no one approaching, I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission for deliberations. This project is in Commissioner Christensen's district, and so I would invite Commissioner Christensen to ask her questions.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go back and talk about, just make sure we're clear. I'm not concerned about the bond issue, so we'll have to discuss that under somebody else's questions. And I'm generally in favor of this project. I don't have any problems with it. I can certainly understand the fiscal issues these things just are long, slow efforts. So I appreciate applicants' perseverance, if nothing else, stamina. Okay, so I only have two things I really want to talk about, and that is, first of all, the vesting condition. I just want to make sure we are clear about that. And I am fine with giving the applicant more flexibility than we gave them under the previous CUP. I just want to make sure, I'd like to look at that language again and just make sure I understand what it says, and because I still isn't very clear to me. So this one, this phase, the phase zero, the interim, has to be vested within 24 months of the effective date of this permit, and the effective date of this permit is the day it gets approved by now.
It's actually 14 days you take action today, unless there's an appeal. So,
that's
where we get the effective date. If there's an appeal, then it's not effective.
Until we don't need to explain that. It's going to be – that's clear legally commission is, but we'll find out. So if you could make just some language suggestions at some point before we're done here, Michael,
or Whitney about how, just to make sure we're clear on what the effective date is, does the commission have any other?
Yeah, Commissioner Irving does, and I do as well.
I'm confused, probably, as always. Phase zero has to be vested in 2 years, but it has to be removed within 10 years. So how does this 12-year period, and please explain that, how those overlap correctly?
Now, these were based on the phasing schedules that the school had provided, and I was speaking with Mr. Mack before this hearing, and he had been suggesting that perhaps it would be better to extend the temporary campus to 12 years in case they ran into that circumstance where they were not ready to build the phase one, 11 years
to
down
start
the line.
On phase. The
but
way
the,
this
the
reads
campus,
to me
yeah.
is that phase one has to start by year 9 in order to get vested, or somewhere in year 10. There has to be substantial work, but by the end of year 10, phase zero has to be gone. So I don't understand this overlap.
Phase one must be vested within 12 years. So there's three possibilities here. The first possibility is that the temporary campus gets built, 10 years go by, phase one's still not built, and then the temporary campus goes away.
For 2 years.
For 2 years, then phase one.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
And so that's the thing, Mr.
So maybe
Mack,
we should change
was,
the language on
so
this.
The idea was to have the 10-year time limit on phase zero be extended to 12 years to match the conditional use permit time limit on when phase one can be built.
Or shorten phase one from 12 back to 10.
That's the other option. We would err on the side of less restriction just because the school is being back through the
Understand, but basically there's two options there.
Yes.
Okay. That is one of my concerns about this phasing
That's
question.
That's a good point, I think. Commissioner Murphy.
Actually, my comment was on the 14 days.
What?
The 14-day, you're asking to put a 14-day, the effective of this
process.
Permit on the appeals. That applies to all conditional use permits.
Right.
I don't think we should put that in every, if that's the law, I don't think we need to include it in the conditional use permit every time we approve one, if that's the standard procedure within the law. That was my only comment on that.
Okay.
As far as the vesting period, it does seem to make sense they both match, but even then you're still going to have a overlap period because they're going to have the temporary campus there while they're building phase one so then they can move from one to the other. So even at that, they still would have to start construction in year 10 to be done, say, in year 12, so to speak, in order to move out of.
Exactly. I mean, I'm confused by how this works. So
such a short
somewhere in year 10, let's say they start on phase one so that it gets vested.
Right.
But at the end of year 10, the temporaries have got to be gone, but phase one isn't built. They've just started on it. Where do the students go? And now you're back to a rental or something. So there's something that just doesn't jive in my mind. Either we need to give them more time or tie these things more closely together.
I think you can make both 12 years, but it's still up to them. If they're going to build it, they need to build it. If they don't, they don't.
Okay.
If they get the 10 years, they don't have the money.
I just wanted to have that discussion.
They pull out, they're done. Yep. And so it's kind of up to them to comply with it, but I agree we probably ought to use the 12 for both the interim and phase one and phase two.
I agree with that.
Commissioner Topping, did you have anything else to say on that topic?
Not on that.
Well, then please hold off a minute.
Sure.
Okay. One of my significant concerns about the project was phasing. And the reasons for those concerns are when you have the purpose of phasing has to do with the changing in building codes over a long period of time. For example, typical building codes like the National Electrical Code, the National Fire Code, they get revised every 4 years. So if you're talking about a 12-year phasing schedule with vest or an unlimited phasing almost for subsequent buildings after phase one, if they start at year 11 and do substantial work, well, then they vested all the buildings, And, you know, who knows, they don't even have to do substantial site work on each and every building. And so to me, this approach is not consistent with the intent, if not the letter, of the ordinance. It is a separate project that ought to have its own conditions. And there's other inconsistencies, which we can get to later, about submittals and approvals, which I think the applicant has already noticed about when prefab buildings are the project, essentially. The county has limited ability to review what is being put on the site. In effect, I think Mr. Conger makes that statement in his staff report. So I think as we go through the conditions, I think we're going to see some conflicts by treating this as one project rather than the temporary project and then the project we approved as it was presented before. And so as we go through here, that has become the gist of the difficulties I'm having with this. So I hope we can figure out how to do this. But I've thought about this for days, and I just haven't come up. Otherwise, I'd be, other than separating them into the two, original project plus the temporary project, I don't know what to do.
Let me ask staff and council, are there any guidelines on vesting periods for CUPs, or is it pretty much, from what it appears here, up to the Planning Commission to use whatever term they feel appropriate? I mean, we're talking about 12 years here. That's a long time out. That's apparently acceptable, or there's no restriction?
I think that you have a large amount of discretion there. I mean, we have our standard, 12 months for a minor use permit, 24 months for a conditional use permit to vest. But there is this idea of a phasing schedule that allows you, and through the conditional use permit approval on its own, you do have the discretion to change those time periods how you see fit. And I agree that there could be some work done on coming up with a more concrete phasing schedule. I think that staff felt that they wanted to give more flexibility to the applicant. I think you have the ability to do that as well. So it does get a little bit possibly tricky down the road if we were not to have a phasing schedule.
Yes, it does.
So instead of having definite years by which each portion of the phase of the project needs to be started, they would start the first phase, and then they would basically just be subject to our ordinance for completion of the schedule or completion of the project. So they're not supposed to have the construction lapse at any time, but, you know, that could take quite a while. And it could take them many, many years to finish the project. You can allow them to do that, or you can put more firm deadlines in there.
Let me ask you this. But isn't it whether it's this is being phase one through phase eight is being treated as basically one project, because they're not individual phase dates that are being approved by the commission. So when that substantial construction gets performed on phase one, that triggers the clock. And so they've got, 2 years to get the substantial construction to vest the land use permit, and then they get 3 one-year extensions, right? But they're going to have to finish all the buildings within that time, right?
So actually, they get 2 years to start working and complete substantial site work, just without any of these time frames that we've put into this permit, just based on the ordinance.
Right.
They can come in for up to 3 extensions before they even start working. So once they complete substantial site work, they're vested. Then they just have to keep doing enough work so that we don't consider the permit to be lapsed.
So if they stop construction on any of the buildings within 12 months, that's the lapse time, right? They got a year.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
So you're saying the 2-year CUP still, that applies to the initial vesting, this interim part of the project?
That's what's being recommended in the modified language, is that they would have just your normal 2 years for the interim phase to get that done.
And then we went on to say that would also vest the entire project.
No, we're saying that the rest or the permanent facilities would vest on when phase one begun.
Yeah. But they have
12 years
to do phase one.
Correct.
And then each it's still a phase project, so they are going to, I just read it here, they're going to pull a separate permit for each phase. So they could do phase one under a permit and get that done, and then a year or two later do phase two or three. So this could go on for many, many years.
30 years.
Either. Yeah, potentially with the different building permits under the various phases in addition to the phasing that's
the significance
phasing caused by the CUP.
Chairman O'Grady, because it's true that temporaries are ubiquitous on school sites, public school sites throughout the state, as well as private. And the question relative to that, in my mind, is what kind of, if you're going to talk about protracted extension or use of the of temporaries, there are tie-down requirements, I believe, that go with temporaries, and maybe this is a question for the architect. That's seismic tie-downs, I believe, to keep the kids safe in case of a substantial earthquake. And so the question is, should those change? This project would not be subject to those unless it's only partially built. Is that the temporaries are only partially built? Is that, have I got that right? In other words, if you only put in a few temporaries now, and then the code changes, and then the rest of the temporaries, for the good of the kids, should actually be built to a higher standard. That wouldn't apply if we say go ahead with current standards. Is that basically what we're doing?
You know, I actually think I was wrong.
Yeah, you were. I was sitting there going, what?
Not Ms. McDonald, no way.
Nothing personal.
So the use permit, once it's vested, we can't change the standards that go into it. But the building permit is subject to the code that's in effect when they pull the building permit.
Okay, so those, that's a moving target. Okay. And
so that's a moving target, you guys. Okay. So if it isn't like you're going to use 17-year-old building permit things when... If you're going to use whatever happens. Otherwise, how could the building inspectors keep track of, well, what when was this vested? And, you know, it's when the permit is pulled.
Okay.
That's when you look at what's current.
Okay. Well, let me follow up on that now. Okay. Phase zero. Okay. The submittals, applicant submits to staff. Staff reviews them, so that's fine. Okay. But they only, instead of putting in 16 of them, they put in, what, 4 or 5 or whatever. And then, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road, they put in the rest of them.
Well,
but they have their construction permit for all of them. So it's that long...
That's not really what we're talking about here. The reason they're doing this temporary thing is so they can do it down and dirty, get it done fast, all of them, so they can move their school onto here, so they can get do the funding and the efforts that they need to actually build the permanent stuff. I mean,
okay, well then let's not talk.
It's possible, but that's not really that part. That is not.
But there's 8 other phases after that. Yes, Ms. Orton.
Commissioner O'Grady, yes. on your scenario of. They get a building permit to put on a bunch of modulars, and they don't.
Right.
Well, the building department would not be able to final that permit.
Correct.
That permit would have to be modified to only final the buildings that were set there and were done correctly and things like that. And so they would then have to come back later to do more building. So it's not like there's an open building permit that's hanging out there.
Okay, what about phases?
And they can come back any time.
Okay, then let's talk about phases 1 through 8, because that's the more significant concern when there are no time frames for those individual phases that might start at year 12 or later. I mean, the applicant could have the architectural plans done for multiple for the campus, right, and submit those. But because of financial constraints, the phasing would actually be determined by the financing, not by the architect's ability to produce or submit the drawings. So then, if all those submittals are done and reviewed and approved, and a construction permit obtained, but they only do, say, one of the buildings or two instead of all eight phases, and the other phases are deferred until who knows when. What you said about temporary still apply? In other words, would only a construction permit be issued, even if they submitted all of the building plans, would it only be issued for the ones they're going to build as part of the first phase, for example? Or would they apply for a construction permit for all the phases? Yeah, this is what
it's up to them. They apply for whatever permit they
want. Yeah, okay.
Permit whatever phase they want.
All right.
It is up to them. I mean, I don't think that they are going to spend the money on getting plans drawn up if they can't. It was a phased project, but once it gets vested, we want them to be able to do their fundraising efforts to actually have the money go towards building the project and not coming back for county permits.
Right. I think it was the temporary part of this project that lasted 10 years that caused me to maybe got my attention and caused me to scrutinize a little bit more what the ordinances really are trying to accomplish with phasing. And so that was why. Yeah, Mr. Mack, you're chomping at the bit to weigh in on this.
If I could share, because I feel we're going off tangent a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're either going to build a whole phase or we're not going to build the phase at all. We're not going to come in and only put two or three modulars. We have 200 kids now. We're going to go in and put all the modulars in, and we're going to be occupying that. And then we're going to be paying the loan off, and then we're going to have another campaign to raise the money for phase one. We're going to build all the buildings within phase one, because if we don't, those 200 kids that are down here aren't going to fit. They won't have any
place
to
go. I was just following up on Commissioner Topping's concern about the modular phase. My main concern is are the permanent building phases and not specifying. Like you say, we're going to build phase one when we start on that.
Yeah.
Okay. But then what about the other seven phases?
And I believe we have a timeline that we had approved during the first CUP, which is also part of this CUP, which says how many years.
It's
been taken out.
That's
okay.
That's my point. It disappeared, and I'm thinking.
But I also want to ask you, Commissioner O'Grady, what ordinance are you talking about? I'm confused.
Sure. Chapter 22.64, permit implementation, time limits, and extensions. And it covers partial phase project, non-phased, incomplete site work requiring a bond. That's where it's at. So I'm reading that.
There's no ordinance that requires phasing and requires the stuff that you're talking about. There's no requirement of it. It's not required.
I can maybe... Michael's put it up on the screen.
Ah, good.
So I think that perhaps what Commissioner O'Grady's looking at is where it says, where a project phasing schedule has been approved, construction permit shall be obtained and substantial site work shall be performed on at least one approved building. And so that's where the idea of a phasing schedule comes into play. And the idea being that usually you have to... under the subdivision above that, under one, for a single construction period project, you have to do substantial site work on all proposed buildings. So I think the idea is that if you're not going to make them do substantial site work on all of the buildings and you're going to allow them to do only one approved building, there are other things in place that will set forward the time schedules for completion, or at least the beginning of those phases. But the definition of a project phasing schedule isn't very concrete, and so I think that you could go the way that it's being proposed now by staff, where you've got phase zero, giving them 2 years to get that done, and then including all the rest of it in the next sort of phase. It's almost like breaking it into just two phases instead of nine.
Yeah, exactly. And where it says partially completed project on page 6-31, it says when so if you have a multiple building project, but it's only one phase, then it says the permit shall remain valid unless work ceases for a period of 12 months and no schedule for the phase construction work was authorized by the land use permit. So if there's no phasing authorized for these other buildings, then and construction stops,
well, there's then, of phasing because we still have special conditions applicable only to phase two and special conditions applicable only to phase three. And just because they're not necessarily defined by when they have to be vested doesn't mean that they're not phases. I'm getting very confused about details that I'm not really sure I should be worrying about.
I think that if it helps, so the issue comes with down the road, 12 years from now, how are we going to figure out whether what they're coming in to get building permits for is still valid under this permit? So if they're in phase one, you know, they come in and they get permits to start construction on the buildings in phase one, and they only need to get one underway within phase one to have the entire permit be considered vested, then we don't worry. Then it only you don't look at the this section that's up on the screen any longer. You only look at 64120 in terms of whether or not the use permit has lapsed. So when they come in, maybe it takes them 10 more years to come in to start the next phase.
2 years ago, where they did a phasing schedule for each of the buildings. I mean, that seems perfectly normal to me, and this does not.
I think here's what I think. Yeah. I kind of go back to Ms. Orton's comments, which I think that this type of project is different than our normal commercial project. I think when you have projects by nonprofits, whether they be schools, yep, or religious institutions, environmental, you know, efforts, you have a different situation, and you have to be more realistic about where the money is coming from and what kind of financing is available and what kinds of disasters can happen to our economy and our world. And I just think you need to be more flexible and more realistic about how long some of these projects might take to build. And it might take 30 years for an octagon barn, and it might take 30 years for this school. And that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, well,
that's where I'm at.
I have two other lights on, so maybe we all haven't had a chance to fully express our thoughts. So, Commissioner Irving, your light is on.
Thank you. So, let me say that I think I share the chair's comments. I mean, why did we approve on page 1-86 of this report, Exhibit B, conditions of approval with phases very specifically spelled out, you know, but I do hear what Commissioner Christensen and Ms. Orton have to say about we look at maybe this kind of project separately, and maybe that's a finding that we make to override previous conditions. I do want to say that I support the applicant's request partially to modify conditions 7 and 8, and I would say that given that they are intending to use modular buildings, I would agree with removing architectural elevations. This is on page 1-4 of the staff report at the top. Architectural elevations, colors and material samples for retaining walls, landscaping, irrigation, and maintenance plans. I would support their request to at least partially ease the pain on 7 and 8. I have a lot more concerns over.
Well, I haven't finished with my concerns, so maybe we could kind of, you know, nothing personal.
I didn't realize, Commissioner Irving.
I thought we were talking about.
Well, I did too.
I thought we were back to free.
No, I haven't finished with my
concerns. Erase that page. Back to you.
You know, I'm about ready to call a recess here. Actually, I think it's getting out of control. But Commissioner Topping has patiently. Commissioner Topping, your light is on. Do you want to have more comments on phase?
After the break.
Okay. All right. So it is time for our break. And so 15-minute break till 10:45 for everybody, all right? Okay, I declare this hearing in recess until 10:45. Okay, I call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back from our morning recess. Where we were where we have been on phasing, and Commissioner Topping indicated he wanted to weigh in on the phasing issue.
Yeah, just a question I had, and that was, where was the phasing map? And it was answered. It's pages 1-105 through 1-112, and that gives you the construction phasing, the building phasing, by building number, I believe. And so that answers that question quite clearly. The thing that I was curious about, however, is the pedestrian safety as it relates to access to the temporary site, especially during potential construction on other parts of the other phases. And I was wondering if staff could explain any, if there are any issues that relate to that. Will kids be coming here by foot, for example, or is it all drive on to the temporary?
Well, ideally there will be some people coming in by foot because, you know, there are residential areas nearby and this is a school that's close by. Okay. But because it is a private school, I imagine a lot of their clientele would be coming from a much larger regional area. As far as pedestrian impacts, you were talking mostly about during the construction phase?
Well, okay. You're going to go back to it if you'd like.
We don't need to.
Well, Commissioner Christensen had not
Commissioner Topping, you know, we don't need to design construction safety conditions. That's part of what our regular ordinances and laws and public works and building people do. I'm just...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Carroll.
Also, the applicant, I think, has some comments that they would make about what their school standard procedures are for construction, and I think maybe...
Okay, but I don't want to do that right now. Okay, thank you, and we would welcome that information at a later time. Right now, we're trying to get through phasing, and
right.
I noticed, just to try to wrap that up, I noticed that staff was caucusing during the break, and I didn't know whether there was anything that came out of your caucus that you wanted to add about construction phasing only at this point.
Actually, I don't think we do.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Christensen.
Okay. I've said what I think about phasing, and we have some disagreements possibly among the commission, and I guess we'll get to that resolution when we maybe go into specific commission discussions. The only other item I really wanted to discuss was the question about the wetlands. Even though I understand that the applicant had some concerns about some of the other conditions, the only one they mentioned today was the wetlands one still, which leads me to not really worry about so much about the other ones. I'll let staff's recommendations stand on those. So the wetlands one, I wanted to know if staff had... I mean, my understanding is either they can move the temporary buildings more into the... you know, away from the wetlands and more into the hillside there, or they can change the way the buildings are so they don't impact the wetlands in terms of the 25 feet, or we could waive the 25-foot setback. Those are the three options.
Basically, the issue with the 25-foot setback is when the wetland mitigation measures will be triggered. And the wetland mitigation
right.
measures are described in Condition 19, and we have a condition.
We have the easement.
One EV.
Yeah, they have to create the easement right away.
Right. Now,
so that's where the mitigations would normally take place.
That's also for mitigation for oak
right,
removal
right.
as well. Condition 1EV says no development shall occur within 25 feet of wetland areas unless impacts are fully mitigated in accordance with Condition 19.
Right.
So the choices are they can either move the schools 25 feet away from the wetland areas so that they
or mitigate.
Do the wetland impact mitigation at that time.
Right.
Or if they choose to have buildings within 25 feet, then they can have a biologist go out there and make an assessment of what the impact is and do the wetland mitigation for that portion of the impact at that time.
Right. So
so that's the choice.
Right. Yeah. And I wasn't really understanding what the applicant was wanting to do then, because I'm not going to agree to allow you to build buildings 5 feet from a wetlands, even though I understand. You know, it hasn't been there forever, but legally, let's just talk about the law. That really is a law.
It's important. Wait a minute.
If I can interject for a second, what I was hearing with a comment from staff before the meeting started was, you need to stay 25 feet away, and by the way, provide a fence.
No, I think what they're saying is you either need to stay 25 feet away, or you build what you're going to build, and you need to mitigate.
Yeah.
And so that,
because I just wanted to make a point, when we reconstructed the wetland, which I'll put up here, slide that up. That's the reconfigured wetland. And that wetland's right on the edge of the football field, and we're not still going to be 25 feet away from the new wetland. We're going to be right up against it. So I didn't want to have a fence, or like where that green line is, saying you can't go in there when I have ball players running up and down the field in that area.
No, I think the idea is that we know you're going to impact wetlands. We're going to let you mitigate for that.
Right.
That was
what I was saying is you're not impacting a wetland until you're tearing into it. I didn't see the need for a 25-foot setback. 25 setback by the biologist report was only to Pismo clarkia. It wasn't to a wetland, and that's the point I was making.
Michael, you want to get me confused now? I don't know.
The circumstance.
I thought this was so clear before I started today, and now I am completely boggled.
What we were trying.
That's a first. You usually nail it.
I know.
What we were trying to define
I haven't come
in
to
that
planning
condition
commission meeting.
Is at what point is the wetland impacted, and at what point does wetland mitigation need? Would have to do a report addressing what specifically the impact was, what the nature of the impact was, and recommending. Yeah.
That sounds fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's so that's
about as flexible as we can be.
So, yeah.
You know.
So so we're going to leave it the way it is, and then I think we have a better understanding. The applicant has a better understanding.
Can I? The original site plan shows the football field in the wetlands. So I assume the wetlands are being relocated in order to build the football field?
That's correct. And that's what this plan is showing. This shows the football field graded with the mitigation wetlands shown in yellow.
Okay. So they're trying to say is they don't want to do the mitigation now in phase zero. They want to do it down the road when they build the football field.
Well,
you're saying if you're within 25 feet, you need to do some form of mitigation to offset whatever effect the biologist says there is from that.
I don't
impact.
Know what they're saying, but I'm saying that if they get within 25 feet of a wetlands and they have an impact that's determined by a biologist, they've got to mitigate. Then, with whatever they're doing, building football fields, building temporary buildings, doing grading, whatever it is, that's when it's triggered. That's what's required, and that's what we're going
to. And they had asked us to reduce that to 15 feet, correct?
Something else, but that's not going anywhere.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So,
Commissioner Christensen, yes. Just because when it's my turn to go through my questions, I'm recalling that I think I had a question about fencing, both construction and permanent fencing, and I wonder if there's a nexus on the fencing with the wetlands during, for example, the first phase, and then would fencing. Construction fencing have to be moved, but then is there permanent fencing required for phase zero? I just want to be sure we have the full story about what happens with these wetlands and the mitigations. And
yeah, condition 19H, which is on page 1-19, speaks to the fencing. It says, a fencing plan shall be prepared demonstrating how public intrusion into the sensitive wetland areas will be minimized. And so at whatever stage there's going to be an impact to a wetland, there's going to have to be a fencing plan demonstrating compliance with this condition.
So the fence may have to move from phase to phase.
It probably will have to move from the temporary phase to when that site
when
is graded out
of the field is
field
done.
Because the area of disturbance is different.
Okay, and I realize this is an aesthetic issue, but it's a cost issue too for the applicant about moving fencing, and what kind of fence are you going to require vis-a-vis condition 19H for phase zero, and then have it moved or obliterated as part of the remediation, and then another fence installed to protect whatever the new wetland is going to be after the football field is built. I think, is the permanent fencing going to be different from temporary fencing?
We didn't get to that level of detail, and we just said a fencing plan needs to be developed, and the purpose of that fencing plan is to avoid kids, you know, accidentally running into the wetlands or doing things.
Okay, I was thinking aesthetics and cost, but okay, I'll back off on that one. And
it's not happening for 40 years anyway. That's just joking. Okay, so believe it or not, I thought we'd be talking about that and we'd be done by now, but I guess not. Yeah, I'm done.
Well, you're done.
I'm done.
Okay, Commissioner Topping, you have your light on?
Yeah, quick question on the water course that's reflected there. It's just a local course, water course, right? It's not a. There's no combining designation or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
No combining designation.
Right. Commissioner Murphy, your light's on.
Yeah, my biggest question was I'm trying to look at the map here and get the elevations, but it appears to me we're building this in a hole. My big concern on the whole thing here is drainage plan and grading plans and all those things are properly addressed, because they're building the temporary campus in the lowest point on the property, apparently, and it's actually going to be a retention basin at some point in the ultimate project. Right. I assume that's all being addressed in this temporary plan.
Yeah, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works, Condition 7 D and E and F address that. So when they come in for building permits for the temporary units, we'll be looking at drainage, make sure they don't flood their kids out or the neighbors.
Yeah, and I highlighted those conditions. So I assume there's going to be some other type of drainage or storage facility temporarily put into, I don't know if the place floods or not. It's pretty steep. I assume during heavy rains there is water flowing off the property down to the property below into some type of drainage. So that, I just want to make sure, obviously, that's being addressed, and I assume it will be addressed by Public Works in approving any grading and drainage plans required.
It will be, yes.
Okay. Let's see. Talk about misting, phasing.
The whole question of phasing, we went through last year. I'm kind of curious as to why we didn't have this kind of discussion about phasing for them at that time, but in any case, I believe the desire to be flexible, like we have been for the Octagon Barn and Jack Reddy Park, is the right way to go. Which brings me back to the question that we started with, or one of the questions we started with, which was this bonding or removal. So my question to staff is,
Commissioner Irving, could we just pause a minute on the first point you brought up about conditions 7 and 8?
Yes.
And so we can make some progress and decide if the commission really wants to.
I'm throwing it. Throwing it out for discussion to come back to, but sure.
Okay.
Let's try to get these done as we go. Does anybody else agree that conditions 7, A, and B are superfluous here when you're buying?
No,
I don't either. I agree with staff's position. As I get into my comments about submittals on individual items, perhaps that language need to be tailored a little bit, but not throwing overboard submittals that can be legitimately be made. during the phase zero.
When you talk about submit the following to the Department of Planning and Building for review and approval, I mean, it seems like those A and B will require fairly simple, straightforward submittals, but they should be submitted.
Yeah.
You know, they won't be complicated. They are modular units, but what color they are and what
That's
color
the That's two no's and one yes, Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have an opinion?
I think we still need a basic requirement, but if you're talking about prefab traders, they should be able to give you a standard elevation, not a custom elevation drawn by somebody saying, here's the standard elevation for one of these traders we're going to use in the project, not draw up 18 traders.
That's how I interpret it.
I just don't want them to have to be faced with somebody saying, well, you know, this trailer, which is a standard trailer, now you have to repaint it to blend in.
Mr. Mack commented about that there's only certain submittals that he's not going to do architectural elevations for these trailers. He'll get whatever he gets from the manufacturer, and presumably staff will appreciate
that. And my other point that where I disagreed with Commissioner Christensen was on the issue of the impact and on the wetlands, and I was supportive of the applicant's desire to be within 5 feet, not 25 feet.
Can I ask you a quick question on that?
Sure.
What grading is going to happen with that football field, if any?
As I understood it, I'll talk to the applicant, but I thought it was already graded out.
That was my impression.
I think there's 7,000 cubic feet, I think is what I read.
With the phase zero, there's about 7,000 cubic yards of grading that needs to be done, but that doesn't complete the grading for the football field. There would be, during a later phase, when the football field was to be put in, there would be additional grading done on that site. And that additional grading would cover the entire wetland area, I believe.
And that would be in?
I believe it's phase three or, let's see.
Well, phase one talked about the lower play fields, which doesn't really address the football. Softball field is in phase eight. I'm just glancing quickly. I don't see the football field in the original phases 1 through 8. Gymnasium, outdoor education, playfield, the football field.
Probably
it may be the lower play. The lower play fields may be the reference to the football fields. I believe they even had two different phases of doing fields. I think they were going to start with a smaller field and then extend the field during.
They have an extension of the play field in phase 7.
Yes.
Okay. So in any case, to me, I think I'm
okay.
That's maybe. I don't know if that answered Commissioner Topping's question there about grading.
Well, the reason I asked it was because I was under the impression that most of the grading had been done, and so it's a question of placement of two modulars, but that apparently is not the case. Apparently there will be grading needed to place those modulars within the setback if we were to allow that.
Yeah, and that, as I understood the dialogue earlier, that is permissible. The only consequence of that might be that when the biologist gets out there and sees what the impacts are, there might be more mitigations required at that time in order to implement the desired plan of the applicant. But this conditions as written do not prohibit.
I understand they don't prohibit. Okay. I'm thinking that it's just unnecessary at this point.
Okay, well,
because it's going to pop up now, and I have some questions about that. I mean, when bond amount is $50,000, that's not you're not referring to the cost of buying a bond. You're referring to the total bond that you were proposed originally is $50,000.
And that was a rough estimate we were just discussing with public.
So if you I can tell you that a bond of $50,000 isn't going to cost $50,000. Right. It's going to be
maybe $1,000.
In my business, I'm watching a client purchase a bond for $1,200 that's going to cover $64,000. So I'm thinking, gee, maybe that's not such a big deal. But what would give me more information to make that decision, is that if the temporary campus remains and be in violation, the county could pursue remedy through the code enforcement process and ultimately through permit revocation. Do you have any sense of what that would cost? How much staff time is involved? A full hearing, permit revocation? I mean, it seemed to me that could be an excessive amount of time. Plus, as Ms. McDonald said earlier about what it has, the process of which we have to go through in order to, if it's going to be a lien on the property, to make sure that the county is in primary as a primary lien holder, assuming that they will have borrowed money against the property. So I'd like to, do you have any sense of what a permit revocation process costs the county, taxpayers?
I don't, and I'm not sure if Ms. Orton has an idea, but I do know that many of our code enforcement activities are billed to the violator. So, I mean, if this were to be a code enforcement case, they would be, there would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they would be getting statements and accruing charges based on how much staff time was being allotted towards the code enforcement case.
So if can
somebody tell me if that is in fact the case, we can bill all of the costs involved with the code enforcement process and permit revocation and liens. You can bill that to the applicant here.
The permit revocation process, no. The code enforcement process, probably. It just depends on which way we decide to go with it. You can build in costs into the total amount of the assessment or the lien.
Thank you. Well, then I still go back to the fact is I don't think there's enough information here to decide whether we require a bond or not. But from my limited experience in this, I think the bond, if the bond is only going to be $50,000, I don't think the cost is a significant one. And I'd rather have a bond there than to have to go through this process.
Mr. Marshall,
I'd love to chime in on this.
Please do.
Mm-hmm. I've got lots of experience with bonds, but number one, $50,000 is just for removal of, we're looking at a bond that may be around for 10 to 12 years, number one. So then you have to define, well, what are you bonding for? Do you want to restore the entire site after they've put in roads, curbs, gutters, sidewalks, grading, or do you just want to remove the temporary uses, the temporary structures? So I think your commission has to define what it is you want to do. And then secondly, a surety, there are a number of different bonding choices, one being a surety, which is you pay a percentage per year over the 5 years. I believe that's how it works. And the surety, from my experience, if the county had to go claim a surety, it's going to take at least a year or longer to try and claim a surety. So you'll still have costs associated with that action that aren't going to be recoverable potentially. So your best bet, our recommendation, staff's recommendation is, no, there's no reason to bond for this particular project unless you board wants to do that. But I think you have to be very definitive on what it is you're asking us to bond for.
Can I ask, are you purchasing these trailers or are you renting them?
Excuse me, could you please come up to the podium so it could be recorded? Thank you.
In the time frame that we're talking about, we'll purchase them. Okay. We can resell them afterwards.
So I was going to say if they were rented and they stopped paying the rent, somebody would come and get them. But if they own them, obviously they won't.
Okay, well, I guess I appreciate the information, Mr. Marshall. However, I think staff needs to present the commission with what it feels like the necessary remediation would be, and then the commission would decide whether we want to hold the applicant to that or not. I felt like coming in here today that the ordinances did require that. Now, with some of the changes in the phasing, perhaps the ordinances don't require it. I still feel like, for protection of the county, that the intent is to require a bond when the whole project isn't completed. So, but were the neighbors noticed about this changes to the temporary project here?
Yes, and I believe we did 1,000-foot noticing on this part.
Okay, very good. Some of my questions have been answered already, so I'm just going to be skipping over here.
Well, on page 1-4, we talk about conditions 7 and 8 and what's required in terms of submittals, I guess. And at the bottom, it says, the county's building permit authority for these units is limited to plan checking and expansion inspections for foundation and building accessibility. So I think when we go through the conditions, I think we need to be sure that we're not requiring something of the applicant that he can't do. And so I think there are requirements for low flow water closets and architectural elevations and other things. So I'm presumably that was not intended. Okay, on the bottom, on 1-5, condition 44 deals with mitigation for biological impacts and requires the granting of an open space easement at the time of development of the temporary campus. Okay, so I put an applicant's hat on, and okay, we if we grant the easement and do all the paperwork, it's in perpetuity. Is that right? Okay, but then if at the end of 10 years or 12 years or whatever we ended up with, you know, who knows what happens in 10, 12 years, what if the fundraising is not successful or whatever the reason is, the permanent campus does not go ahead, the condition to remove the temporary campus happens. Now you've got land that's owned by the applicant with this open space easement on it, but he's stuck with it at that point. Is that correct?
I believe so. Nothing's forever, though. I mean, even an open space easement granted in perpetuity, I believe, could be modified by the board. So if the school
went away,
I believe that they could, and I would defer to council on this, I believe they could come forward to the board of supervisors with a request to extinguish that easement, and I think it takes a 4/5 vote or something.
I think that's right. There is an abandonment procedure that has to be followed in order to extinguish the open space easement. Otherwise, it would be there in perpetuity. It could be amended, but...
Okay, because if the applicant might go to sell the land, it would maybe restrict some potential buyers if there was this open space easement.
I think that's why they requested deferring out till phase one, and maybe that makes sense if they don't go ahead with building the school. Maybe that open space easement shouldn't occur until phase one.
Well,
phase zero.
Okay, I don't agree. I agree that it should be there, especially now that there is a process whereby if the plans don't unfold the way they think they are going to, that there is a way to deal with that. So I wasn't proposing to do it.
There's no mitigation occurring in the open space easement during phase one, is there?
There might be.
I'm sorry, phase zero.
It might be if they impact in the wetland.
Impact the wetland.
Yeah.
And oak and manzanita plantings as well.
Will occur during phase one, you think?
During phase zero,
I mean.
There will definitely be impacts to oaks and manzanita, and that they would be replanted in the open space easement area. So.
All right.
Okay. Here I've come to Mr. Conger's memo about the bond. Let's make a decision on the bond, shall we? Starting with Commissioner Christensen, would you?
I'm fine with staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Persuaded by public.
Okay. Commissioner Topping, bond, no bond?
staff recommendation.
Okay. Well, that does it. Well, that was how I was going to vote anyway. So. Okay. Yeah, it, with the lien rights and the assets, that takes care of my concern. Aesthetics. Okay. When I reread the negative declaration, one of the significant potential impacts was aesthetics. Okay. I've seen lots of different portable classrooms and what they look like, and they don't look anything like the permanent buildings as far as aesthetics were concerned. So when I read the staff report about aesthetics, when I read the negative deck, but I didn't see that aesthetics were addressed in a staff report, I felt like I needed to have a discussion with staff about the mitigations for aesthetics. I know there's some landscaping requirements, but Mr. Conger, could you go through the landscaping? I presume landscaping is what is going to be mitigating the appearance of these portable 16 or however to say, can we have maybe a choice from another manufacturer that maybe looks better, maybe a little more expensive, but or is that beyond what staff would have the authority to do?
Typically, we don't do that. I can think of a few cases. Well, they were all discretionary use permit cases. We did one for CHC that used a modular unit in Oceano, and we requested that they do some post factory improvements to the modular unit to make it blend in with the design plan for the community of Oceano. I don't anticipate anything quite that crazy with this. The location is is in a fairly distant location. There's a berm. I forgot to mention that there is a berm between Oak Park Road and where this level area is. So that also
and
does
some trees as well that are existing.
Provide some blockage. And so I think just based on what we got, when the submittal comes in, we'll get a landscaping plan. We'll get colors and materials. And with that, I think we can come to an agreement with the applicant on something that would not create an aesthetic impact.
Yeah, I hope if the cost penalty isn't too great that the more attractive ones would be selected. So, okay. On page 1-12, I believe 44 parking spaces were proposed, but staff is wanting 45 to be consistent with ordinances. So I believe Roman numeral 3, whatever that is, needs to be changed from 44 to 45. Okay. Okay, and then the phasing you had proposed and you put up on the board earlier, and that still is your recommended phasing. Or are we going to change that to 12 years or what are we?
Well, that was the discussion. I don't know if the commission came to consensus on that, but it was to extend the 10-year temporary campus to 12 years to be in alignment with when the vesting can occur on phase one.
Okay, let's.
And that would affect condition 1E and condition 48.
Okay. Well, then let's make a decision on that.
Yeah, I think 12 years just makes a lot
for everything.
Sense from what? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, likewise.
Okay, then please make that change. All right. Here we go on page 1-13. This is condition 7. It talks about submitting architectural elevation for all proposed structures. So at least it's part of the record that for the pre-manufactured buildings, you're not requiring that.
Right. This is a general condition that applies to all phases.
Okay. And then down in 7C, landscaping plans. So even for phase zero, there will be landscaping plans submitted and approved to achieve the aesthetic screening.
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Commissioner Irving.
Is that on landscaping plans only for the temporary project? You're not asking them for landscaping plans for the whole?
No. Each phase, I imagine, would have a separate landscape.
Just to be sure.
Okay. On page 1-14, this would be H, utility plans, which include undergrounding of all utilities. Okay. Now, presumably, this also applies to all phases, including phase zero. I just wanted to be sure that that's understood and correct. Okay. And then here we talk about toilets, ultra-low flow, waterless urinals. That sort of thing is available as an option on these classrooms. I mean, can you review for that sort of thing? Is that within your purview to review?
I believe we do have the authority to look at it because we do have water conditions that need to be met on this site, but I'm not certain in terms of the market, if they have these low flow units available.
Okay, if they
modulars,
are
modulars, I've seen them in place, elsewhere.
If they're not available, then that's okay.
If right. they're not available, I think.
But if they are, then they have to provide them. Okay. That's why this is a little putting these two things together under same set of conditions. Let's see. Okay, I talked about the fencing plan.
You're zipping through.
Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I want to jump in on Condition 11 on page 1-15, Public Works in their comment letter says revising the condition to reuse 70% of all construction waste. And that seems like an extremely high number, and I look back at the original conditions regarding recycling, and there is no percentage given on page 1-91. Item. I mean, right now, you've got to apply.
Are you on 1-17?
1-16, number 0, letter O.
Letter O.
Commissioner Irving, if I could summarize what condition 11 does. That the purpose of that condition is to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, and the applicant can choose any number of those measures in order to achieve a 10% reduction. And so it's their option which measures they choose from that list.
Is that clear to the applicant?
It's in the condition.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarification, Mr. Conger.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. And let's keep flipping through here.
Well, Yar, can I ask, to achieve that goal, is it just a matter of bringing out a dumpster and putting everything in it and sending it to the recycling site at the waste land site, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, there is a process that's outlined in our in the ordinance. And basically it is you return in your receipts for dumping, just to show how much that actually went to into the waste stream was diverted over to recycling for each of the loads you bring to the site.
On page 1-24, condition 34 deals with prior to site disturbance activities. All required protective fencing shall be installed. Well, I think we discussed before that only the protective, for phase zero anyway, only the protective fencing that is in the area of construction of phase zero. So this is another one of these areas where one of these conditions that I think there's a difference between phase zero and the rest of the project. So, anyway.
Well, I think what they pointed out, if you go back, I think it was between 3 and 4, all conditions apply to each phase separately. Every one of these things we're reading here only applies to one phase at a time. I think that's on...
In that little box?
In the little box, yeah. On page 112, conditions apply to each phase individually, unless otherwise noted.
Well, but what's a phase? I mean, it seems like we've come down to two phases. We've come down to the...
Well, the phases
the phases are still described in the description of the project.
Which administrative buildings, which outdoor spaces, which how much parking.
And at this at this point, the phases are essentially building permits as opposed to investing schedule. It's a building permit schedule, really.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly. They are construction phases that are described as
right.
such.
Right.
Yeah. So the building permit combines with the construction phase, but you can't have a building permit that's out of phase.
Right.
But you could have construction without a completion of all the buildings. I suppose you could do your grading ahead.
Mm-hmm. Not without a permit.
Okay, but that's a grading permit, right? That's separate. I mean,
the grading permit requirements would kick in on that phase if you started doing the grading.
For each phase will have a number of permits associated
right.
with it. There will be a grading permit. There will be a structural permit for each structure. There may be separate permits for fire sprinklers. So there's going to be a number of permits.
They combine in different ways.
Involved with each phase.
Yeah.
So you're just going to have to be sure when you approve these sequential permits or whatever for all these phases that you have an understanding of potential impacts from construction activities on these for condition 34, because you can see where some construction traffic or it might go through another phase, and so it's going to be more challenging to get the right fencing in there and in place and maintain it during the right times. So anyway, I was just trying to visualize how all this was going to happen.
Okay, on page 1-27, a condition 48, I think that was one of the ones, Mr. Conger, you said we were proposing a change instead of reconsideration, say amendment to the CUP.
Yeah, and then the other change to that was to bring 10 years to 12 years.
In that condition? Oh, yeah, there it is, 12. It's under my tag here. Okay. All right, so that's on the record. Condition 68, was that proposed to be revised, or does that stay the same?
I believe 68 stays as it is. There were references in condition 1F to 68, though.
Yeah, 68 just refers to the ordinance. And then, condition 1F refers to 68.
Isn't this the one you rewrote with the new?
No, that's 1F.
Well, that's why I was trying to get...
I thought we had the 24 months in the
drill.
Oh, the well exists.
Well, the well does exist. But is it within the confines of phase zero? Or does there need to be infrastructure, pipelines, power, what have you, to some other part of the site in order to get the water to phase one for the next 10, 12 years?
I would defer to the applicants, but I believe they already have infrastructure for the well in place. It's not located where the temporary campus is located, so they would have to do a utility plan to have water lines extend to
so there's going to be trenching and so fencing and all of that associated with getting from wherever that well is to. Mr. Mack, would you like to comment on that?
The infrastructure is already in for the well. It's near the garden area. Only thing we would be doing is digging a trench and installing a pipe.
From that area to phase
Correct.
Zero. Okay. Thank you. I think maybe that's it. Okay, those are all of my questions. Commissioner Topping, your lights on.
Yeah. I just want everybody to know that I fully support this project, but I'd like to know how the conditions assure review for pedestrian safety on an ongoing basis.
Can I try this one? Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. With phase zero, they have to put in their public improvements, which includes curb, gutter, and sidewalk, which will get you sidewalk up to the project site. Secondly, the California Building Code requires pedestrian protection be constructed when construction is adjacent to pedestrians, and that's part of the Uniform Building Code, California Uniform Building Code. And number three, I think the applicant is going to be working with their contractors to ensure that vehicles coming in for construction don't interfere with the drop-off of the children at the time, because it just makes common sense to minimize the number of vehicles coming onto the site at once.
I understand that condition 16 covers road improvements as it relates to public roads.
Right.
I understand there's also a drop-off in front of the temporaries. What I don't understand is how the project in its individual phases, or the first phase at least, phase zero, will be reviewed for on-site pedestrian safety between the public road and the temporary buildings.
Between the public road? You mean Oak Park?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't understand. There's the public road, which leads into the driveway, leads up to the temporary building.
I mean, maybe there's an answer in the plans that have already been prepared. But
right.
Mr. Conger said that they expect some students will come by foot.
Yes. There's a sidewalk up alongside the driveway going to the site.
That's my answer.
Oh, okay. Okay, that was easy.
There's
Sorry.
A sidewalk.
Yes. There is a sidewalk on... I believe the westerly side of the driveway, just one.
Okay.
And it goes from Oak Park all the way up to the project.
Okay, so that's not covered in any of the conditions, but it's not going to go away. So it's going to be there. And
they have to provide ADA access, and that's a requirement.
ADA.
Yes.
So ADA is the thing that ties down the other phases as well.
Well, it doesn't tie down separating construction from
ongoing activities, but that'll just be taken care of with the Uniform Building Code.
Okay. So Uniform Building Code provides for...
Pedestrian protection.
Pedestrian protection. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Any other questions, comments from commissioners? Okay. Commissioner Christensen, it looks like we've arrived at a time for motions.
Excellent. And I'm impressed with good work. I only have one question before I make a motion, and that has to do with the language of the recommended action, Whitney. It says the second one, improve whatever I'm going to say, but the conditions listed in Exhibit B. Isn't it really Exhibit C? Because that's the one without the strikeouts that we're really supposed to be referring to.
That's a good point. I think, you could get there either way.
Yeah.
But if you refer to Exhibit C, then that's the clean version.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, so I would like to recommend that the Commission consider and rely upon the previously adopted mitigated neg deck, ED08-078, and that we approve the amendments or modifications to conditional use permit DRC 2008-00021 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as modified today and the conditions listed in Exhibit C as modified today.
Second, please.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Our last meeting of the year, which is December 13th, 2012.
So moved.
Second, please.
Here, here. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. Motion passes 5-0. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day and a good happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you all back on December 13th.